Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, September 21st, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my home studio in New York. It's the first day of fall. Today is the first day of fall, officially, right? Because I know it felt like that. It was like 38 degrees here where I am.
Correct. Yeah, had a little bit of frost last night. Had to bring in one of my plants from outside. Yeah, it's a little chilly up here in the Northeast.
Love it. It's starting to get that baseball playoff feel for sure. Over the weekend, a lot of news. Future Hall of Famer Justin Verlander threw in a simulated game the other day, and he felt something in his elbow. And so on Saturday, he took to Instagram to announce that he's going to need Tommy John surgery.
Hey, everyone. Wanted to hop on here and share some news that in my simulated game a couple days ago, I felt something in my elbow. And after looking at the MRI and conversing with some of the best doctors in the world, we've determined that Tommy John surgery is my best option. Obviously, this is not good news. However, I'm going to handle this the only way that I know how. I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to put my head down, work hard, attack this rehab, and hopefully come out the other side better for it. I truly believe that everything happens for a reason. And although 2020 has sucked, hopefully when this rehab process is all said and done, this will allow me to charge through the end of my career and be healthy as long as I want and pitch as long as I want and accomplish some of the goals that I want in my career.
Big concern for the Philadelphia Phillies, who are trying to make the playoff field in the National League. Slugger Bryce Harper exited their loss on Sunday with lower back stiffness. Joe Girardi told reporters that Harper will get treatment and his status for today's game is unknown. On Saturday, Tigers manager Ron Gardenhire abruptly retired. We'll be talking about Gardy with Tim Kirkjian. Twins third baseman Josh Donaldson says umps, quote unquote, have no accountability. This was 2 days after he's tossed for kicking dirt on home plate and joined with umpire Dan Bellino. We'll be talking about that Zoom call coming up in a moment with Tim. The Padres and the Mariners, the Padres trying to make the playoffs for the first time in 2006. And here's what happened in the top of the 11th.
And the 0-1 pitch from the right-handers hit out towards left field. Over towards the line is Lopes. He's got a long way to go. Still on the run. He won't get there. Drops in for a base hit. Now it rolls away. Manny's going to try and score. Here comes the throw to the plate. Not in time. Machado slides in, and the Padres are back in front. 5-4 in the 11th, and Moreland gets all the way to second base.
That was from 97.3 The Fan, and that big hit set this up with the Padres leading 7-4.
Swing and a miss. He struck him out. For the first time in 14 years, the San Diego Padres have clinched their spot in the postseason. Is this the best Padres team ever? We will find out in October.
The Padres win it 7-4, and they can celebrate on their home field.
Break out the hats. Break out the t-shirts. It's been way too long. Really hard holding back the smiles in that Padre dugout right now and on the field.
Sixth playoff appearance in franchise history and the first since 06.
Don Arcillo, Mud Grant on the Padres television network. A bunch of teams clinched in recent days. Among those, the Minnesota Twins on Saturday. Tyler Clippert on the mound.
You wait a little bit longer and then you end up almost crushing you on deck batter.
Fly ball left field. And the Minnesota Twins are back in the American League playoffs.
And the only thing you wish is that the fans were able, you know, be there to share it with them. And hopefully the ones that stuck around to watch the end of this game are understanding that it's an important feat. And hopefully this one ends up in a longer run than we've seen in the past. And about time for this team to take the next step. So congratulations to the Minnesota Twins. Rocco Baldelli and everybody in the organization, players on the field, a job well done. Business not finished yet, but this is the first step, and good job, boys.
That from Dick Bremer, Justin Morneau on the Twins television network. Before we get to Tim and Sarah, we're 2 weeks deep into the NFL, and the ESPN slate of NFL podcasts is ready to help you analyze and interpret what went down over the weekend. You can listen to Fantasy Focus Football, the Adam Schefter podcast, the Mina Kimes Show, and the Bill Barnwell Show, wherever you get your podcast. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus,
Their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Seamheads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkchian on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkchian covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, we're getting clinchings just about every day now as this massive 16-team playoff field is filled out. Mostly we're getting American League clinchings now because the American League is so polarized. You get the Rays, Yankees, Indians, Twins, Oakland. They have joined the White Sox in the National League so far. The clinchings are the Dodgers and Padres. Among the teams that are now in this mix, is there somebody that you are paying special attention to?
The Marlins, Buster. We can't take our eyes off the Marlins. If they make the playoffs, it will be one of the great stories that we've ever seen, even in a shortened season like this. There were two locks in the National League heading into the 162-game season. The Marlins and Pirates would finish last. And instead, in a 60-game season, the Marlins have a chance to make the playoffs. And yet they're 10-14 at home. They've been outscored for the season. They went eight days without playing a game this year because of the COVID outbreak. And now they have a chance to make the playoffs, a decent chance, which is amazing. But we got to keep our eye on them because they got four at Atlanta and they got three at Yankee Stadium. This should be a fascinating final week for the Marlins.
Tim, one team that I'm interested in whether or not they make the postseason, because I think they would be the National League version of the Indians and being a team no one wants to play, and that's the Cincinnati Reds. You know, they are playing better. They won 7 of 8. And if they get into a short series with another team between Trevor Bauer and Luis Castillo and Sonny Gray, who's going to come back off the injured list to make a start here in the next couple days, that's going to be a team no one's going to want to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And Castillo, who's been so good his last three times out, is going to start twice now before the end of the regular season. He starts tonight, then they can use him again on Saturday or Sunday for a game to potentially get them into the playoffs. So the Reds have three games at the Brewers and then three games at the Twins. So it's not an easy situation. But at least they got one of the teams they need to knock out, the Brewers, right in front of them. So I love the way the Reds are pitching right now. And at some point, even the last week of the season, maybe they'll start to hit. And if they do, they are dangerous.
The American League Cy Young Award, you could give it now. Shane Bieber is going to win that award. It's probably going to be unanimous given how great he is. The National League Cy Young Award, Tim, this is... You know, it's hard to describe how wide open this feels, how closely bunched together about five or six pitchers are, which is why it felt last night, you know, and we had the Cubs and the Twins on Sunday Night Baseball. And I mentioned after Yu Darvish gave up, I think it's 4 runs in 6 innings, that it felt like watching a golf tournament and seeing one of the contenders double bogey on the 17th. Like, this feels like it takes him out of the running. How do you see that race?
Yeah, it's and I'm voting, by the way, for the NL Cy Young this year, Buster. So I have one of the most difficult decisions, and I'm frankly not looking forward to it. That's how close it is. I mean, Jacob deGrom is always right. I mean, look at his whip. Look at his ERA. It's ridiculous. Trevor Bauer's got a 180 ERA and an 082 whip. Max Fried hasn't given up a home run yet. It's 7-0 with a 1.96 ERA and the highest WAR among the National League starting pitchers. And Corbin Burns has come out of not nowhere because we know who he is. We know how good his stuff is, but he has a 1.77 ERA with a whip under one. This is crazy what we're doing. And I think Darvish 10 days ago was the leader, and now he might be third, maybe even lower, depending on where everyone else goes. But you're right. One bad start right now can cost you the Cy Young. That's how close it is with three, four, maybe even five guys.
The Elias Sports Bureau sent out this great number on Max Fried. He is the fourth pitcher in the live ball era since 1920 with zero homers allowed and zero losses in his first 10 starts of the season. So he joins Bob Nipper, 1981, Sonny Siebert, 1971, Hoyt Wilhelm in 1959. And Tim, this is going to be one of the votes for you where no matter who you vote for, you're going to get yelled at.
Oh, it's terrible. Look, I'm not that thin-skinned, Buster, but there are no wrong answers. There are at least three guys who deserve a first-place vote, and somebody is going to get a first-place vote, and I'm going to vote him fifth. That's how close this is, and yes, I'll get screamed at. We all will, but oh boy, that's why I'm hoping privately, publicly, that it clears up a little bit by the end of, by a week from today.
Speaking of Cubs and Twins last night, a fascinating situation. The Cubs, of course, you know, have struggled for runs this season. In the second inning, there was a play, a ball hit into the left field corner where Schwarber was playing, and he didn't move after it with great alacrity. I think perhaps because he assumed the runner was going to stop at second base, but instead it turns into a triple. And then we go into the top third inning, Tim. Kyle Schwarber's not on the field. He was replaced by Cameron Maybin. David Ross was our in-game guest. He spoke with Matt Viscursion. He made it very clear, nope, Kyle Schwarber's fine. He's not injured. After the game, when he was asked about it, he said, I'm going to keep that in-house. I think it's pretty clear. He benched Kyle Schwarber for not playing hard. And Kyle Schwarber, in speaking with reporters, said, I think the guy shouldn't have gotten to third base there. It put you, Darvish, in a tough spot. I put him in a bad spot there. I put the team in a bad spot there. And I was thinking back during the broadcast, Tim, about how before the first game that the Cubs played this year, we had Rossi on a Zoom call and, you know, asked him about what's it going to be like for you to be pulling guys and sitting down guys who you played with and you're friends with. And I got to tell you, his self-assuredness was really... it was funny to me. Like, he was like, I'm going to have no problem doing that. Like, that's not going to be an issue for me at all. And that's the way it looked last night in handling of Kyle Schwarber, someone who everybody likes and everybody thinks works hard.
Right. But he made a mistake last night, and he was good to own up to it at the end instead of pouting. And I think the manager did the right thing. And not because I sat next to David Ross for 3 years on Baseball Tonight or at games, because I know this is who he is. He comes across as this playful, really funny guy, which he is. But deep down inside, Buster, he is a tough, tough guy. I can't tell you how many times I'd be watching a game with him. He would see somebody not give the proper effort, and it really upset him while he's sitting working at ESPN. I knew he would be the same guy when he went in with the Cubs. And trust me, Buster, you know this. When any Cub got out of line, in 2016 especially, David Ross was there to say, what are you doing? One guy left the game with a stomachache. And Rossi went up to him after the game and said, you took yourself out of a big league game because you have a stomachache and we're trying to win the pennant? That's what he did. And that's what he'll do as the manager. And frankly, sorry, we don't do enough of this. We let our players get away with murder sometime. Trust me. Kyle Schwarber won't do that again, and neither will anyone else on the Cubs, knowing you will be embarrassed in mid-game.
So as we were going through that broadcast last night, Tim, different guys are coming to the plate, and you're looking at the offensive numbers, and it's staggering. Like, you're like, what is going on with the Cubs in their offense? You know, Javier Baez isn't hitting, and Chris Bryant's not hitting, and Kyle Schwarber's not hitting, and Anthony Rizzo's not hitting. And this number jumped out at me as I was doing the prep. And look, you know, in this era of analytics, RBI is not everyone's favorite number. Chris Bryant has 5 RBI for the entire season in like 122 at-bats. What the heck is going on?
Buster, this is major league wide, okay? Cody Bellinger is hitting 230. Christian Yelich is hitting 220. We had really good hitters hitting under 200. The last I looked, the league average was 246, which is going to be the lowest since 1972. Look, we've been over this. The pitching is so unbelievably overpowering these days. I don't know how anybody gets a hit anymore, but this year has been ridiculous. Maybe it's the shortened spring training. Maybe guys still haven't figured this out after 60 games. But this is going to go down as a season where great players don't look very good for most of the season. And it's in part because of the pitching. But again, Buster, bigger subject here. We'll get to it later. Some point you're going to have to make an adjustment. Today, this guy, this pitcher is better than I am. So I'm going to have to try something else today. I'm going to have to try another swing. As Joe Madden calls it, I'm going to need a B hack today. In order to get through this at bat, every at bat is a fist fight now for these big leaguers, and a lot of the hitters are losing against this kind of pitching.
So I'm going to throw a curveball at you here, but when this was brought up the other day, it felt like a curveball. And listening to it, I was on the Josh Donaldson call on Saturday, and you know, this is the day after the Twins had been shut down by Kyle Hendricks, and he mentioned to the reporters that, well, you know, the lights here in Wrigley Field are really bad. And I'm paraphrasing. I don't know if he actually used those exact words. But then he also mentioned that the Cubs players were talking to the Twins player about it, about how bad the lights are. And just in watching that game last night, Tim, after hearing Josh Donaldson mention that and seeing the hitters look like they couldn't even pick up the ball at times, I kind of wonder if there's something to that for the Cubs specifically. I'm going to have Sarah Langs on in a little bit, and I think she's going to have some numbers about how the Cubs are doing in night games. But just – it suddenly occurred to me, yeah, you know, that might be something. What's your gut feeling?
Well, I've done, I would say, a dozen night games from the booth at Wrigley Field with Eduardo Perez. And he says that every single time, this is the darkest stadium in the major leagues because there are no lights directly in center field. If you look the next time you do a night game at Wrigley, Buster, the outfield, the warning track looks like it's in complete darkness. It's the darkest outfield I've ever seen because they don't have enough lights there. Now, I don't know if that translates to around the plate. You can't see it as well, but this, a bunch of outfielders led by Eduardo Perez have told me it's a really difficult outfield to play in a night game because there aren't enough lights at Wrigley Field.
All right. The highlight of that Josh Donaldson conference call was not talking about the Wrigley Field lights, but addressing that situation last week when he hit a home run after arguing with home plate umpire Dan Bellino about a ball strike call and then crossing home plate with a swipe of his foot, putting dirt on home plate. And Josh Donaldson was on a Zoom call speaking to the reporters on Saturday for the first time since that incident happened. And I got to tell you, he doubled down. You know, at the beginning of it, I thought, okay, he's just going to say, yeah, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, maybe I didn't handle that as well as I should have. I shouldn't have been ejected from the game. But no, that wasn't his approach at all. He talked about how he feels like umpires are not accountable, held accountable. He feels like the umpires sometimes don't understand that this is the player's livelihood. As the conversation went on, he narrowed the focus a little bit. He said, you know, by and large, I think umpires do a good job. But it was he started all that by saying, you know, I'm going to wait for Major League Baseball's letter to come to me, and then I'm going to have some things to say. And then he just went off. What was your take on Josh Donaldson the other day? Because I got it. Rocco Baldelli, the Twins manager, came on right after him. And I got the feeling that Rocco was a little bit torn. He's talked to Josh twice about the ejection. And most managers I've covered would say to a player in that situation, look, we need you to stay in the game. It was 3-2 at that point in the middle innings, but at the same time, he wanted to support Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, well, first off, Josh Donaldson has been doubling down for his entire life on everything. So this should not have been a surprise that he did what he did. I've never seen that before quite like that. I'm sure somebody's been thrown out crossing home plate after saying something to the umpire. I've just never seen it. And I've never seen anybody intentionally drag dirt across the plate as he crosses after a home run. So, but should he can't get thrown out. I go back way too often, Buster, to things Earl Weaver used to say to me, and especially to his players. Don't get thrown out of a game and don't get ejected. Our players are better than theirs. And when you get ejected, we lose on that. So don't do it. And Josh Donaldson kind of acknowledged that, but especially with the really big games coming up, you've got to be a little bit more disciplined and hold your anger so you don't get tossed from a game.
On Saturday, we got word that Ron Gardenhire, the longtime manager of the Twins, the last few years manager of the Detroit Tigers, is stepping away. You know, he had been dealing with some food poisoning lately, and he abruptly announced his retirement. Just coincidentally, there was a Zoom call in which Justin Morneau, who, of course, played under Gardy for the Twins, spoke about him and talked about his great connections with players. 1,200 career wins, 16 years of manager in the big leagues. Tell me about Gardy.
Well, baseball lost another veteran manager, older guy, with a great feel for the game, and more important, a great feel for people. He had the perfect temperament to take the Tigers in a rebuilding situation and get them back to contending status. He is absolutely hilarious, as you know, Buster. He's really smart. He is really tough on his players when they don't do things the right way. He told me a story once, Carlos Gomez, and when playing with the Twins, missed the cutoff man so badly that the ball went right to Ron Gardenhire while he was sitting in the dugout. So when Carlos came in, Gardy said, "I don't ever want you to throw me the ball again. Do you understand?" And yet he had this playful way with his guys. He joked with them all the time. Denny Hocking told me a story once that they were out having a beer one night, the players and the manager, which just doesn't happen anymore. And Denny got a phone call. So he's got a glass in his hand. He puts the glass on top of Gardy's head and takes the phone call, which is not going to happen when Tom Kelly is the manager. And it's not happening with most of our managers today. But that's who Gardy is and was. Great feel for people, which is what managing is all about these days.
Two more for you. We got about 2 minutes left. Last week, and I wish I had known, Tim, that you had this big feature coming out on Joe West when you came on Monday. I would have given you a chance to highlight it then, but it came out. I'm sure it generated a ton of response. It was a really long. How many words in that feature, and what was the coolest detail that you dug out about him?
Well, it was like 6,000 words, Buster, but I don't have much time here. I'll make this quick. I really expected to talk to players who said, "I'm not talking about him. I'm not going there." All 20 guys I talked to were willing to talk on the record about Joe West. So that surprised me first. I was also surprised at how self-deprecating he was. In my 2-hour lunch with him, he just laughed relentlessly, mostly at himself. And I know him. I don't know him well, but I know him much better now. And I just think he has a really good quality of being able to laugh at himself, which I think is really important when you're an umpire.
And we got word on Saturday from Justin Verlander that he is going to require Tommy John surgery. I personally think, Tim, he's never going to throw another pitch for the Houston Astros again. He's likely to miss all of next year. He'll become a free agent. And there's no question he will move forward with his career burning to potentially take a run at 300 wins. What do you think?
Right. Well, he's going to pitch again. But when he comes back, Buster, help me here, I think he's going to be 39 years old when he comes back from Tommy John surgery. Most guys don't come back better from it, even when they get it at 22. He's going to get it at 37, 36. So this is a difficult spot. But knowing how wildly competitive he is, he will pitch again. I don't see him getting the 300 wins. But even if he never pitches again, I think he's a Hall of Famer, and I think that should add to the conversation.
Yeah, there was a debate on social media over the weekend about him as a Hall of Famer. What are they looking at? Like, to me, he's a slam dunk first ballot, near unanimous, if not unanimous, Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's not going to be unanimous. I'm voting for him if he retires today. But I've seen the criticism, and I understand. You compare him to some other guys who aren't in, but You look at the no-hitters, you look at the Cy Youngs, MVP, really good team, strikeouts. It's a really good resume.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
Okay, Buster. Talk to you soon.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Numbers game.
Sarah Langs is a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I was talking with Tim Kirkchin about what Josh Donaldson said about the Wrigley Field lights and how it does seem dark in Wrigley Field. As you look at the Cubs and their offensive struggles this year, how much would you assess the issue of the lights as being a problem?
Yeah, you know, I think that obviously hearing, you know, that he was talking about that, you know, just right off the bat, it sounds like it makes a lot of sense. We know that Wrigley Field has not traditionally been somewhere there have been a whole lot of night games, obviously those Friday day games that there used to be, and, you know, just so many Saturday day games, I feel like, as well. And then you get to Sunday, and unless it's Sunday baseball, it's another day game. They've played a lot more night games this year than usual, but they're hitting .215 in home night games, which is last in the majors. Next lowest is the A's at .220. So there's definitely some bad numbers at home. .319 OBP in those home night games, .347 slugging percentage. But they've actually been worse in home day games. They've only played a handful of them. You know, obviously they used to play a lot more, but they're hitting .199 in home day games with a .305 on base and .369 slugging percentage. So none of those numbers are good. So even when you split it that way, it doesn't seem that there's one thing they're doing a little bit better there. It's just really not great.
The common denominator in those ugly numbers seems to be the Cubs hitters.
Yes, absolutely.
Unbelievable. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 13. So that's how many years the Padres postseason drought was. And now it's over, with them clinching yesterday in a very 2020 way because they won in their home park, batting first and in extra innings with runners on base and all of that, runners on second. Last time they made the playoffs was 2006. And I love looking back at old lineups. This has become something that I feel like I do whenever there's something that happened some amount of a while ago, especially this year, because it's just a lot of fun to look back at old names, right? So this was their opening day lineup in 2006, the last time they made the postseason. Dave Roberts, Eric Young Sr., Brian Giles, Mike Piazza batting cleanup, Adrian Gonzalez, Khalil Greene, Vinny Castilla, Josh Barfield, and opening day starter Jake Peavy. So if 2006 doesn't sound long enough, I think that lineup sounds like it was long enough ago. And that was the third longest active playoff drought. The Marlins of 16 years feels like it's going to end this week, you know, sometime this year, and this, which is the second longest on the list. But the Mariners, which is 18 years, is going to continue into 2021.
Number two
is 21. So Luke Voit has 21 home runs this season, which is tied for his career high. Last year, he hit 21 home runs in 118 games. This year, he's at 21 through 49 games he's played and 53 games for the Yankees. The last Yankees player to lead the majors in home runs, and he has a pretty hefty lead because Jose Abreu has 18. Last Yankees player to lead the majors in home runs was Alex Rodriguez in 2007. And Voit's 21 home runs are tied for third most by a Yankees player through 53 games in a season. The only Yankees player to hit more through 53 games in a season, Babe Ruth twice, 24, 1928, 22 in 1930.
Number one.
Number one is 100. So Garrett Crochet made his debut for the White Sox on Friday, and 100 was basically the velocity, his velocity of choice, let's say. So he threw 600-mile-an-hour pitches in his major league debut, which was the second most of any White Sox pitcher in an outing in the pitch tracking era at the time. So then what did he do in his second appearance yesterday? He threw 700-mile-an-hour pitches, which tied Nate Jones on September 20th, 2012, the same date, for the most by a White Sox pitcher in an outing. That's since 2008. And his outing on Friday included a 101.5-mile-an-hour strikeout pitch to Jose Garcia, which is the fastest strikeout by any White Sox pitcher that we've got a record of. And it was the same night that Todd Frazier got Adam Duvall looking with a 55.3-mile-an-hour knuckleball. And we just have to acknowledge he's 21 years old. He was the youngest White Sox pitcher to get into a game since the 21-year-old John Garland in September 2000. And he was drafted 11th overall this year. So he's the first player to appear in the majors the year he was drafted since Brandon Finnegan in 2014. First White Sox player to do that since Chris Sale in 2010. And of course, because of, you know, the situation of 2020, he also hasn't pitched in the minors. So he's the first pitcher to reach the majors in his draft year without pitching in the minors since Mike Morgan and Tim Conroy did it in 1978.
Wow. Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him as we move forward. There's no doubt. It feels like he's now taken the mantle of that guy everyone wants to see throw hard. Real quick, a little trivia for you. The Padres, last time they won a playoff series was what year?
98.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now I want to get your view on the National League Cy Young Award. We talked in the broadcast last night about how Yu Darvish's outing may have essentially taken him out of contention in this incredibly close field. If you had a ballot, the way Tim Kirkchin has a ballot, who would you cast a vote for National League Cy Young Award as of this moment?
As of this moment, it feels like maybe it's Corbin Burns. I don't think he's going to win, but I think that what he's done, and he hasn't had that, you know, rougher outing that I think we've seen each of the other candidates have for whatever reason in the last few days. So right now, I think I'm going Corbin Burns.
All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Monday, last week of the regular season. Justin Simmons writes in at Justin Lance Sim 1. Hey, Buster, why is no one talking about Travis d'Arnaud? Is he overshadowed by Acuna, Freeman, and Ozuna? You'd be hard-pressed to find a signing that's provided more return on investment than d'Arnaud's by the Braves this offseason. What do you think, Buster?
Yeah, Travis d'Arnaud has been one of the best players in the National League, and I don't think there's any question this year he has been the best catcher in baseball. But when you play alongside a Freddie Freeman, who's, I think at this point, is the front runner to win the National League MVP, or perhaps he's running second, and you're a teammate of Max Fried and you're a teammate of Marcell Ozuna, you're not going to get as much attention. The other thing, too, is that Travis is not someone who ever would go out of his way to call attention to himself. And that's probably part of the reason why his season seems to be going under the radar.
Next up, we got Matthew Hawk at mhawk13. He writes in, do you think Devin Williams will get any notice for Rookie of the Year this year with how he's performing? 20 games, 23 innings, 8 walks, 47 strikeouts, and 1 run.
Yeah, thanks a lot, dude. You just stole all my notes that I wrote into the rundown that I was going to use, okay?
I don't think we've mentioned him on the podcast recently, if at all, so.
Well, yeah, no. What happens is that Taylor sends out the note overnight, and so... In doing my preparation, I put down some statistics. And so right then he built those statistics into his question with notes that I wrote down. How incredible Devin Williams has been. So you stole all my ammunition.
Wow.
Matthew, you're exactly right. Devin should be in the National League Rookie of the Year conversation.
I am clueless and I apologize. And we will move on from here and we'll forget this ever happened. Jake at JakeyRS79 has a question about a couple more Jakes here. What do you find to be a more interesting Jake story for the A's? Jake Lamb's hot play since he was picked up off of waivers, or Jake Diekman's 0.00 ERA after 18 appearances?
Yeah, I think you're going to be with me on this one, Taylor, that we're paying attention to Jake Diekman, because he came on the podcast as we started all this. He talked about his concerns as someone, you know, who's had underlying medical issues for years. And so to see Jake Diekman pitching this well for this long, given everything that he's dealt with emotionally, that's really cool. And at some point, maybe this week, I'll try to reach out and we'll get him back on again, because he's had a remarkable season. And he was absolute in his belief that, yes, no question, I'm going to play if they play baseball, despite the fact he probably was at risk more than just about any player in baseball.
Very cool stuff. Love seeing him going out there and play well. I think it's I think we had Tyler Glasnow on. He's been awesome. You know, you come on the podcast, you got some good juju on your side. So hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Write a question that will allow me to plow through Buster's notes and ruin his whole answer. Please.
Exactly. That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Tim, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.